Coming up, what an excellent day for the return of Pazuzu.
He's back, baby!
Well, howdy folks, and welcome to Minute 113 of The Exorcist Minute, a show where we endeavor to examine, extrapolate, and excavate The Exorcist, minute by terrifying minute. My name is Lester Ryan Clark.
And I'm Keenan Diaz.
And we'll be your holy guides on this journey through what some have called the scariest movie of all time. Okay, so our minute begins with Marin saying, "God the Holy Spirit commands you."
And it ends with the moment of calm in this storm.
Yes, folks, this is the end of round one. But let's get back to the top of this minute. You'll remember we had ended on this wonderful shot where the bedpost divided the screen. On the left, we have a broken, fallen world, an upside-down lamp, and a crumpled dimmy. And on the right, we have Marin standing straight and tall as he looks down at Howdy. He had just finished saying, "God the Holy Spirit commands you," and now he raises his hand in the sign of the cross as he says, "The mystery of the cross commands you." Howdy does not respond, but his breathing is ragged and continuous. Meanwhile, Dimmy is still crawling back to grace. Remember, he had fallen and started getting up, and for a second he was in the crab walk pose, and now he turns over, he evolves, and is on all fours as he makes his way back to Marin. Speaking of which, we cut, and we are once again on Marin's face as he says, "The blood of the martyrs commands you." And again, it feels like he is in control once again. It's a great contrast to earlier in the scene when he's shouting, "I cast you out!" And you feel all of Marin's emotion in those lines, but also a hint of desperation. The power of Christ had temporarily left him, but now it's back. He is calm and commanding as he invokes the blood of the martyrs and makes the sign of the cross once more.
Yeah, he has to keep working even though probably in his periphery he realizes that Damien got double axe handled to the back of the head and needs his help. But he cannot waver from the plan.
Right, yeah. If he takes his eyes off for a second, then all is lost.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But yeah, no sooner does he finish the line about the martyrs than the room is hit with another jolt of force. We cut briefly to the window, just a few frames, enough to see the curtains flapping. I keep having to remind myself that the window is closed.
Right. Where's the wind coming from?
Yeah, where's that wind coming from? We know, folks. And then we cut back as Marin falls out of frame. Then we're on the floor, almost where Marin could have fallen, watching the whole room shake. And Dimmy has finally gotten up, but then lurches forward and stumbles back down next to Marin against the wall. It is such a quick and confusing shot. I don't think we're even supposed to register all of the movement in the first few frames. But basically, we follow Dimmy just as he's getting up and sort of stumbles across the room, and the shaking stops as he lands in a crumpled heap beside Marin, who looks dead. Like, the first time I saw this, I can't remember if I knew he was going to die, but I remember the first time I saw this, that's what I thought this was. And even after seeing it all the way through, I still remember getting to this point and having to remind myself, oh, wait, no, because he looks dead here. It looks like he hit his head and it's over for Father Marin. But then you see him move a little bit. He opens his eyes and he turns his head to look at Howdy on the bed. But because you're focused on him, you might miss Dimmy, who tries to push himself up, falls back down, tries again, and as still and pale as Marin is, Dimmy's face is red with exertion. And I love how we know he's younger and stronger, even healthier than people his own age. Mm-hmm. He boxes, he runs, but this is too much even for him. It is testing his physical limits. And I like how that exhibits his strength, but also Marin's strength, because somehow Marin is able to physically withstand what even Dimmy is having trouble with.
Mm-hmm. And now, yeah, looking at that little brief moment where he's stumbling around frame by frame and falling next to Marin. I'm seeing more of that rug that you were pointing out. Mm-hmm. Yes, that, yeah, you're convincing me more and more. So, you know, the one from Karis's dream that Lester was saying, well, once he gets double axe handled to the back of the head and falls, that might be where he basically is running vertically along this rug, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. As if he's falling. But here's another one where it's the same rug and he's falling to the floor, and this could be, you know, another moment here.
Yeah, he's had a lot of chances to fall face first onto that rug.
Examine it. Do something useful while you're down there. Learn about rugs.
He's very, very familiar with the threading and the pattern.
Right.
Yeah. But yeah, so they both look up to the bed as we begin to hear this high, keening, I don't even know what you call this sound. It's not a moan. It's not a wail. It's not a cry. It's not something a healthy human does. It's something that happens when you don't have control of your own lungs and air is just being pushed out of you and hitting your vocal cords as it goes. Mm-hmm. Whatever it is unnatural and unnerving. And again, completely opposite of what you expect the devil to sound like. We cut and we see the famous silhouette, Reagan up on her knees on the bed, arms free, hands up and curled into claws. The room is filled with smoke, which we only see because of the light, which we can see as either emanating from Reagan like a halo, which again, this is the second instance of white light possibly representing the devil. The first is our famous poster shot, right, with the shaft of light coming out of Reagan's window and shining on Marin.
Yeah.
And we talked about how that could be like Marin answering the call of a higher power, right? The power of Christ is compelling him.
But then, yeah, why is it so scary?
Yeah, right? So in any case, it's odd how in that image and now this one also, the devil's presence is also felt. Any thoughts on that? Like, I'm not talking about the statue yet. I'm just talking about the white light.
Well, yeah, that's interesting. Just the idea of it being something mystical and scary out there. You know, like in Close Encounters of the Third Kind, Spielberg's movie, which is about 4 years after this one. It is terrifying when you don't know whether these lights are coming. You know, at the beginning, you don't know what the lights are coming from at all.
Right.
So there's a lot of interpretations of that movie as, you know, the terrifying nature of being approached by God or angels or something mystical rather than aliens. You don't know what they are at first. Mm-hmm. You know, you've seen the poster, so you know it's aliens. But in the actual course of the film, it's just like, oh, I'm here minding my own business, driving my car down the road and something, you know, something shocking and outside of my understanding. And that's just represented by white light.
And
then later on, you get to know that, okay, these are friendly aliens, but it doesn't mean that they didn't make you shit your pants back there.
No.
Yeah.
Boy, it's the whole, like, be not afraid thing all over again.
Yeah, right? Exactly. Yeah. So whatever this is here, he keeps telling me to be not afraid. Mm-hmm. And yet here I am.
Yeah.
Being afraid.
Yeah.
One last thing about this shot before we move out onto it. So, like, yeah, she's like worshiping it. She's like grappling towards it.
Yeah, I have a question about that.
Yeah,
further down, and like, are you talking about worshiping the light or grasping the light?
Whatever it is, whatever it is, she is. As if she's trying to touch it, like trying to touch this light, and it's not possible to touch it. Yeah,
right.
But she also, so it also recalls, like, you know, the negative side of bondage to this higher power, right? Because she has these straps that Damien has almost died putting on her, like trying to tie her back again, and they're broken and they're hanging off of her like chains, and so in this you know, completely blackened out, you know, backlit idea where she's just this eclipse, she's just the silhouette. It looks like her chains, and she seems to be like delighting in her chains.
Yes. Okay. delighting like, in her chains or maybe like her broken chains?
I don't know. I like the idea that she's delighting in her chains, like oh great, this thing I am here to serve. Because that is, if we're thinking of like devil imagery, that's much more common, right? Like it's the flip side of you know, I am here to serve God. I am here to submit to God. And that's wonderful because God is good and God is beautiful. And like a lot of our devil imagery, right, is like I'm here to serve the devil. And I get my power from serving the devil and being a slave.
I'm listening to an audiobook version of Goethe's Faust right now. And seems like the devil, is, you know, he plays both sides because like when we got Mephistopheles, he is happy to be a slave.
Right.
And, you know, because it's, you know, he's playing the long game. But but no, like I've seen that as well, is kind of the stereotype of people in the devil's service just giving over completely and relishing in the giving over of themselves.
Right. And in like Fantasia, where Chernabog probably isn't the devil, but it's easy to see why you can see it that way.
Oh, I have things to say about that once we get to that every Disney villain.
Oh, great.
Episode. Oh boy.
Well, you know, let's say that Chernabog is the devil, right? Let's just take that. Like, so we have his little slaves, the little minions that he pulls up into his hands, and he crushes them and turns them into pigs, and then he you know, washes his hands of them like they're dirt or something and throws them into the fire. And they fucking love it. Like,
yeah.
They don't go, oh no, what have I done to trust you? They're like, yeah, this is exactly what we wanted to happen the entire time. It was you dusting me off your hands and throwing me into the pit of hell forever. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. I have met Chernabog in other forms of fiction, and I have seen pictures of him, this Slavic god of darkness and death, and that thing in Fantasia is the fucking devil. I don't care what Disney says now, because they don't want to have the devil in Fantasia, but. Walt himself called him Satan himself, I believe. So.
Well, they did both, so it's totally trying to have it both ways. Yeah,
But yeah, and yeah, folks, we haven't even gotten to our big scary devil yet. We're just looking at this light, and we're looking at Reagan.
Light, terrifying, scary.
Yeah, but Keenan, when you were saying like this is her grasping for the light or worshiping it, you're talking about Reagan?
No, Howdy.
Okay, good. Mm-hmm. That's what I thought. Yeah. But yes, so in this shot, we can also see like a faint outline of the Pazuzu statue. It's very faint. I'm not even sure we're meant to see it yet, but it's there in the shadows. We can see it's kind of like the bottom half of it. And we cut back to the priests.
Oh, I see it now.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, you're right. It's there.
Yeah.
I thought you were crazier that my eyes were going wrong, but I see it. I see
that
a
very, very prominent bottom half.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's kind of the thing he's famous for.
Right. I gotcha.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah. And we cut back to the priests and we're closer up on their faces. Again, I love the contrast between them. Marin's face is pale. His hair is white. I know it's not the case, but it almost seems like it has gotten whiter from this ordeal. Obviously not, but it looks like he has been drained of color to the point where his hair looks like brittle and dead. But his eyes are alive with the fear of a little boy who is once again seeing the boogeyman. A child's eyes in a mummy's face. And then behind him, Dimmy's face is so ruddy. It's filled with life, with blood, and also characteristically, it's surrounded by shadow. He is deep in that hair and that coat, peeking out with those eyes, which are tiny, dark caves. And as we're looking at these faces, that keening wail begins to stretch to distort, and we cut back, and now we can see, yes, we see the silhouette of the top part of the Pazuzu statue, and we see it because now it has its own halo, and oh my god, this shot scared me so much as a kid, and I didn't know why, and I still don't know why, which is great because now I can try to deconstruct it on the show. But first, Keenan, how do you feel about this shot?
It's terrifying. So, yeah, so now looking at it, deconstructing it. So our eyes driven to Reagan, right, with this backlight, right, this silhouette. And so we're not even really anticipating anything is in this negative space to the left there, right? And it does this really cool thing, like her left arm kind of pulls back from her worshiping, you know, as high as it can go. And it's sort of drawing our attention to the left. And then just as it's doing that, it's very well choreographed. Its own backlight comes on as we're seeing it from behind it. So we see that within the shot, which is normally not what you would do with the light like this. You would normally have it on the entire time or have it off the entire time. And the arm comes down and those light turns on and it's been there the whole time with us. Terrifying.
That reminds me of the first time we see the little head figurine when Marin is digging, because he goes in to dig and he sort of frees this chunk of earth that we were looking at the entire time.
Right.
And that's where the head is encased in.
Yes, exactly. And yeah, it's revealed in the shot with us that we've already been seeing, and it's so tall. And again, its backlight is terrifying. We see more of its face because of the fill light than we do of Reagan, but it's still quite obscured. So it could be looking at us. It could be alive. We don't know. It's a statue, but maybe it's more than a statue. It's terrifying.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So now, what do we think is going on here? Like symbolically, physically,
phallically.
Well, we know what's going on phallically. I mean, we see that pretty clear. But like, is this symbolic? Is it like a vision, like you know, people have in the Bible? Is the statue really there? Is it only Marin seeing the statue? Does Howdy see the statue? Like, what's happening right now in this room?
Yeah, well, Pazuzu sees Marin and he's happy to see him. For sure.
So Pazuzu like was called, but then he looks over. He's like, "Oh, you're here too."
Oh, it's you.
No, it's you.
I don't know. Like, it's from Marin's point of view,
right?
So I don't know. Sorry. I'm going to completely cop out of this. I like the majesty and the mystery of it. I suppose we're supposed to answer these types of questions on the show, but I don't know. Yeah. Is Howdy conjuring it? It's in the space physically. I don't know. I don't know, Lester. What do you think?
Yeah. Well, worry not. I got, oh boy, I'm going to take up so much time with this thing.
Okay, great.
Yeah. People are going to love it. Good. I think one of the reasons this disturbed me so much was that it confused me, but not in a sloppy way, like, if that makes sense. So not like it confused me because it didn't make sense. It confused me because I couldn't make sense of it. It wasn't wrong. I was wrong. I thought I understood what was going on, and then this happened, and I was like, oh, this is too big and too evil for me to understand. Firstly, I didn't know who Pazuzu was. I thought this was a statue of the devil, like when we, you know, saw him back in the beginning of the movie. Second, I thought it was a real statue.
Right.
And yeah, it is a real statue. Even fake statues are real statues.
We keep trying to make fake statues and failing.
How about that, folks? I'm going to blow your mind right now. There is not one single fake statue on Earth. But anyway, what I mean is, I thought this was like a historical, cultural statue of the Christian devil, which like I fully believed in at the time. And this was also at a time when I attached so much authority to what I much later understood was essentially somebody's artistic interpretation. Like I didn't understand what canon was. And that's all across the board. Like, you know, Super Mario Brothers Super Show, I was like, well, that was approved by Nintendo and it is correct and adherent to the Mario universe. Otherwise, why would they make it?
Wait, so it's not?
No.
Wait. What do I not understand about the Super Mario Brothers show?
Do you remember, like, with Captain Lou Albano?
Captain Lou Albano.
Yeah. Right. And he had the little. It was like him and another guy playing Luigi, and they had those two little like bookends where they were like live action Mario and Luigi,
right.
And then in the middle you would have the cartoon, and the cartoon it had the characters and like all the little enemies that you would see in the Mario games,
right.
But it was always like the Mario Brothers on the high sea, you know, fighting Long John Koopa, or the Mario Brothers in the Old West fighting Billy the Koopa, or the Mario Brothers in ancient Egypt fighting Tuten Koopa.
The boy Koopa?
Yeah.
Okay. So that's not in the video games, I guess, is what you're telling me.
Yeah. So they just took that, and, you know, they just took them and ran with it. But when I was little, I was like, well, yeah, that's you know, I'm gonna play that game someday.
Well, when I was 40 was when I figured that out, that they're not the same thing.
But I mean, like, I also thought that like Return to Oz and Hook were like universally agreed upon and accepted. Like there was a single committee for each of these franchises,
right.
and they made everything from that franchise. Like, I just assumed anything written about the devil or hell,
right.
Like any artistic depiction must have been approved by the church, especially if they were like old. Like any of those old like 15th century woodcuts, or paintings depicting the devil or witches or hell, any of the Renaissance paintings, any of the Gustave Doré stuff, right? I didn't know who he was. I didn't know who Dante was, right? But those pictures and that story about the different layers of hell would pop up in those same like elementary books about the history of the devil. And I'd be like, well, they wouldn't be allowed to lie about this. This is too sacred.
So Mario really went and saved the world from Genghis Khan, and then he never killed another
Genghis
village.
Koopa.
Genghis Koopa. And he never killed another village ever again, and everything was happy.
Yeah. You know, we're actually like, it's one in every three people is actually related to Genghis Koopa. Yeah. This is true.
That's true. That you can't say that on the radio.
Canon.
You can't lie.
They'll take away my podcasting license. Yeah. But yeah, so back to this statue in our movie, right? This hideous, terrifying statue of what I thought was Satan, and which must have been carved long ago by either the church or by worshipers of Satan. And the fact that it looked different from modern interpretations of Satan made me think, oh, well, this is the real. It's real because it's older.
Oh, yeah. It's like getting back to what people really saw when they saw Satan.
Right.
Yeah.
And so, like, by extension, this movie, which was endorsed by some churches, come to find, like watching this movie as a young boy, I felt like I was being let in on a secret that was like too big and too scary for me. Right. It's like, it's the stuff they don't tell you about in Sunday school. It's like, hey, we're going to show you like a real statue. And as to what I thought when I saw this scene, I was a little confused because it looked like the devil in Reagan was worshiping the devil statue. I was like, okay, the devil is worshiping himself? Like, is that a thing the devil does?
I still think so, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's like we just read Paradise Lost and Paradise Regained. He kind of does.
Right.
But then I was like, okay, is Reagan worshiping the statue? But it's not her voice. It's the devil's voice making that weird sound. And why are both of them bathed in this godly light? And why does the devil sound like an old woman? Like, this is way too complicated. So it must be true.
Mm-hmm.
But it was too much for my little child brain. So in the end, I just decided this is dark, forbidden knowledge that you'd have to be a priest to understand. And I just decided not to think about it. And that's pretty easy because it's only there for a couple seconds. And then you can like forget about it. But every time I'd watch it again, it would pop up. And I was like, it was like being reminded of some unsolvable religious mystery, mm-hmm. like the problem of evil.
Well, you were very young, so you yes. weren't aware that the devil could worship himself because
yeah.
you hadn't learned how to worship yourself at that point, probably.
Right, yeah. It starts with yourself, folks.
Well, that you're saying you're much nicer than I'm saying it. I'm saying it dirty, as little Lester doesn't know how to worship his own statue. You,
right. Yes. My monolith. Yes. Gotcha. Yeah. But yeah, so that was back then. Mm-hmm. As to right now,
mm-hmm.
what I think is happening now, I'm still a little bit confused.
Uh-huh.
And now, instead of the problem of evil, we're back to the problem of Pazuzu, because this shot implies that there is a relation between Captain Howdy and Pazuzu,
uh-huh.
which, again, I know I'm the odd one out here, but I never liked that Howdy is a non-Judeo-Christian Abrahamic demon being defeated by the power of Christ, and I've said my piece about that, but this shot sort of confirms it,
mm-hmm.
right? How else are you supposed to interpret this? This is either all in Marin's head, which has been recently rattled.
Mm-hmm.
He's on the floor staring up at Reagan/Howdy, and he gets a vision of the statue from before. And if it's a vision, what does that mean? Like, what is it telling him? Is he realizing only now that it's the same demon he fought years ago, right? Mm-hmm. That's not how it is in the book, right? They know each other immediately. But this is the movie, so maybe?
Mm-hmm.
Or is this vision something that Howdy is projecting, something that he is showing Marin? So it's he's the one making it. And if so, does Karis see it? And what is Howdy trying to communicate? He's like, yes, I'm Pazuzu. Or is the statue just appearing by itself, separate from Marin or Howdy? And I don't mean the physical statue, but like mm-hmm. the essence of the statue, the soul of the statue, right? The real thing which the statue is a representative of.
Mm-hmm.
Like is this not the Pazuzu statue, but Pazuzu himself?
Mm-hmm.
Right, like he was summoned by Howdy, and what does that mean? Like, is Howdy calling upon him to give him power? Is it the same thing I thought back when I was a kid, mm-hmm. except instead of the devil worshiping the devil, it's Pazuzu worshiping Pazuzu?
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't make any more sense. But those are my only options. It's either Marin's vision, which mm-hmm. means only he can see it, which also makes it subjective, or it's Howdy projecting this vision to both of them, or the entity of Howdy is calling upon / worshiping Pazuzu, who might be the same entity.
Yeah, I don't get that. I don't think that Damien sees this. I don't get that feeling, right? Because then he doesn't.
Okay.
Because then later he would say, like, what was with that statue, right?
Right.
Yeah. Hmm. So maybe.
Why this girl? It doesn't make sense. And also, what the hell?
Right. There was a giant 8-foot-tall statue.
Did you see?
Right, so we don't have any indication of that. So I guess the two options are either that Marin sees this or Howdy sees this. We don't get a lot of shots from Howdy's perspective. So,
no.
So maybe it's Marin's. And that I don't know the Mesopotamian religion well enough. Like, I just learned about it, you know, doing this podcast with you.
Right.
But in mm-hmm. some of the fetishist religions, which I know the Mesopotamian one isn't exactly that, but like the god and the object that represents the god are the same thing.
Right.
Yeah. So us today, like, making this distinction, you know, would be is misreading that religion, right? And sometimes,
right.
like, it literally is. So you're saying maybe Howdy has like called Pazuzu here, and Pazuzu doesn't have a form of his own; he just has a statue for him, right?
Okay. Yeah.
So he's literally in the room.
Yeah. Oof. That's chilling. Mm-hmm. But yeah, folks, let us know what you think. Because I'm still fascinated by this single shot,
mm-hmm.
and I want to know what other people think is going on here. So yeah, write us theexorcistminute@gmail.com. And folks, before we leave this statue behind, I would like to introduce you to something if you don't already know about it. There is a Turkish horror movie simply called Seitan. It's S-E-Y-T-A-N. And I am about to show Keenan a YouTube clip. The clip is titled 30 Seconds of Seitan. And it features a version of this statue. It's pretty much The Exorcist. It's a knockoff of The Exorcist. Mm-hmm. Keenan, I'm going to have you watch this. Okay. And yeah, keep your mic on because I want to hear your reactions in real time.
Okay, yeah. Let's take a look here.
All right.
They're doing it exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Oh no.
Oh yeah.
Oh geez. Except crucifixes aren't a thing in Turkey, so they replaced it with something else.
Yeah.
Well, they have that little girl. That's very clear that she's worshiping this statue. And not,
yes, that was my favorite thing. So if you have the opportunity to see either the entire movie or mm-hmm. you can find bits of it on YouTube, they have an alternate to the Pazuzu statue. Almost looks like a three-headed thing.
Yeah, and it doesn't match their Pazuzu statue from the desert scene. So they basically do the whole movie in this little 30-second cut down. Yeah.
Yeah. And they made two. I guess they made two Pazuzu statues.
Yeah. So that's even. I don't know what Little Esther would think of that. But it's a different statue. All of a sudden, some other statue comes
in. Yeah. But you will love it. Mm-hmm. If you haven't gotten enough of us desecrating The Exorcist, and you want a little bit more, watch this Turkish version of it. It is.
Yeah.
It is quite fun.
Yeah, because they're doing it for money.
Oh, yeah.
It's a total ripoff.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. From 1974. Oh, so less than a year after The Exorcist.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Even Wikipedia says it plagiarizes. So usually Wikipedia has to be like,
right.
less emotional, but they say, yeah.
Yeah.
It plagiarizes William Friedkin's The Exorcist.
Yeah. Folks, they tried to destroy all copies of Nosferatu.
Mm-hmm.
But somehow this thing... is still here. Well, I guess Nosferatu is still here too.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, so now I think we're done with the statue. So
goodbye, Pazuzu.
Bye, Pazuzu. But yeah, okay, so we cut back to the priests. Marin is struggling to get up, or perhaps to get a better look at what he thought he saw. And then we get a very weird cut where we appear to have jumped ahead in time. We're back in bed, close up on Howdy/Reagan, struggling, and it appears that someone is holding her down with her arms pinned in front of her. Howdy is thrashing back and forth, and it looks as if they should be screaming or making some sort of like struggling noise, mm-hmm. but the only sound we hear is this slow, ragged breathing, which by now seems as ever present as a respirator.
Mm-hmm.
We've been comparing Howdy to enough other famous villains. I can't remember if we talked about how the breathing is often independent of whatever else he or Reagan is doing. It's mm-hmm. almost, it really is almost like a machine in the background or mm-hmm. Howdy's own personal, like, ominous soundtrack.
Right. So you're comparing him, his breathing, to...
Oh, to Vader. I should probably have said that. I was like, this is just like, do I even need to say it? Like...
Oh, Darth Vader.
Yes. Not Dr. Vader. That's his wife.
I can't operate on this boy. He's my son. And then just from the bed, you hear,
no. Now, as we're hearing this, we also hear Marin. He says, give way to Christ, you prince of murderers. And at this, Howdy stops struggling. Reagan's chest goes up and down rapidly as if she is trying to catch her breath. The light is so stark and her eyes are so sunken that we only see two empty, unreadable black holes. But it appears that Howdy is reassessing the situation. Now, I have done some film editing in my day, and I cannot help but wonder, Keenan, tell me if what I'm about to say is crazy. If this shot right here isn't, I don't even know the technical term for it, but I have done this trick before, if it is what I am thinking it is, it really looks like this is extra footage, maybe like an outtake or a tail slate of Linda Blair struggling, and then Billy yells cut, and she immediately relaxes. So this is the extra footage after another shot they ended up not using. Hope I don't sound crazy. Look
oh,
at
no,
this.
That happens all the time.
Okay, yeah. So, look at this with the sound off. It looks like something from those YouTube compilations of behind-the-scenes footage where, like, there's frantic activity, and then it suddenly stops, presumably because, you know, someone shouted cut. And now, off-camera, everyone's resetting. Linda Blair's resetting. She's catching her breath. She might even be looking at Billy, or she's just waiting for further instruction. And
she can't see Billy because he's, as we saw in some of the behind-the-scenes footage, he's all the way the hell over there, you know, when she gets injured. So, yeah, kind of, like, resting and just, now I need to – I can't struggle because I can't hear Billy, so I'm trying to hear Billy here.
Right, right. And more evidence of this is the fact that someone is holding her down. So in this frame, you see someone's hands pinning her, right? But we're the next frame we go to, or the next shot we go to, there's no one on top of that bed. But before we do that, so the only reason I can think that this is here is to patch up a hole. And we just had that amazing shot with the statue. I'm wondering if maybe they had plans for something else that they ended up not being able to do. Or maybe they did it and it just didn't look right. At this point in the screenplay, and again, Keenan, you said this as well, it's all over the place, this screenplay. The book and the movie are like three different battles in this room, right?
Absolutely.
But around this point could be where Howdy is supposed to shout, "Damn you, Marin," in this like prolonged death cry, after which Howdy begins singing in that choir boy's voice, like in the book. Maybe the statue shot was even part of that, but for whatever reason, Billy decides, no, we're not going to do that, but now there's this big hole in the sequence of events, and they need some way to bridge the gap and get back to them, you know, tucking a sedated Reagan in and deciding to take a break, because that's how this ends. That's the rest of this minute. But they need, like, a succession of shots to get from there to there.
Yep, that makes sense. From the script we have, the blood of Christ commands you. Midway through the word command, however, a prolonged howl of pain and rage from Reagan Demon. Damn you, Marin. And then we go into the singing. But then at that point, everything is also wrong again. Sharon comes in, etc. And then that's the end of that scene. No mention of a statue. And then we go outside to the stairs.
And Sharon's the one in the book who kind of shoos the two priests out because she's got to give Reagan her medicine.
Exactly. That's what's going on here.
So I'm wondering if this thing with her struggling on the bed was it kind of like a little Band-Aid. To put on like a hole that was created.
Yeah, it might be. And the hole could be created by taking out Sharon, but maybe also like, hey, we got this statue finally. It came in, right? Because we had this statue
went to Hong Kong, it
going
went to
all
Australia.
Over the place, right? Right, from Australia. It goes all over the world, right? And it finally comes and we finally use it because I don't see a statue in the script. Maybe it's in later scenes or something, but... No, it can't be.
No.
Next time we come in,
because
next time we come in, you know what happens next time Yeah, I don't think the statue is here.
Yeah. And folks, the shot after this makes me think even more that's what's happened, because look where everyone is. Look where Dimmy is, right? He's back over against the wall. He's crawling from the bottom left bedpost to the bottom right, almost like towards us. So like who was on top of Reagan a second ago pinning her hands, right? Right. Can't tell me that was Marin. and her hands are tied again.
Right. Even if you think, okay, so in Marin's dream or you know, nightmare vision, then her hands are loose. That still doesn't quite explain all the little minutiae here. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, this isn't meant to disparage this in any way. I think this was a clever use of some extra footage that they had that they used to bridge this gap between the statue shot and them getting Regan back in bed.
Yeah, you use some of that stuff that is when you're still rolling, but it's before action and after cut. Use it all the time. Actors don't like hearing that's really useful stuff, because they like to think that, you know, it's only useful when they are on, you know, when they know that they're acting. But sometimes you get, you know, some surprising things you weren't planning for that work in the cut. Sometimes you see transitions because you get to see people turning something on or something off. Yeah. So people use that all the time in the films.
Okay, yeah, yeah. And yeah, folks, I'm only noticing this because we're watching this movie in a way it was never intended to be watched. We are overanalyzing every minute of this film, looking at it under a microscope, and even then, it's amazing how clean and complete this movie is compared to, oh, if we did this with another movie, even one of this caliber, I'm sure we'd see, like, the seams even more frequently. We're near the end of the film, and we've only caught, like, what, two instances?
Yeah, I suppose so. It's a very well-made movie.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Right, and even if the movie did have more, you know, errors, continuity shifts, etc., doesn't mean it's bad at all. You know, some movies are excellent and they have tons of that.
Yeah, yeah. And because of the nature of the content of the film, we can always, you know, attribute it to, you know, somebody's insane brain or something like that. Or supernatural stuff or whatever. Yeah. But yeah, okay, so let's get back to it. So Marin says, "Give way to Christ, you prince of murderers." And we cut, and we are on the floor, on the other end of the bed, looking up. For the rest of this minute, the camera is slowly rising. Marin is framed by the two bedposts. He is kneeling at the side of the bed. We probably don't even notice Timmy until he starts to move, but he is back where he was by the wall in the statue shot, and he is facing the wall as he also rises up on his hands and knees and then falls back down. We can hardly see him, but that always looked so real and so painful. He's so injured that he can't even crawl. Like, I fell down the stairs recently. Yeah, a thing I have not done since I was a child.
Right.
And it was a hard, ugly fall. And we have wooden stairs, and at the bottom of those stairs, I had the most painful revelation that this is no longer a child's body, and gravity is not my friend. And I tried to get back up, you know, like a kid would do, and my body said, no, we're out of commission for the next 15 minutes. You sit here and think about what you did, you idiot. And even after 15 minutes, I tried to get up, and it was like I was feeling how heavy and stupid my adult body was for the first time, and how stupidly fragile. Like, I was like, who put me in this thing? How do I move through life with this glass skeleton in a lard jumpsuit?
I've heard, like, people who deal with bodies, like medical examiners or what have you, like, describe just how heavy a body is, you know? Because, like, when you're in your body and in control of it, like, not after you fall down the stairs, when you're in control of it, like, you you throw your leg around, you know, you kick and whatever, and it's effortless. But a leg is, like, you know, what, 30 pounds of of just ham hock,
Yeah.
Well, that's terrible. Don't fall down the stairs no more. That's my recommendation.
No more falling down the stairs. Yeah.
No more falling down the stairs until you sign this insurance paperwork, Lester, that we've been talking about.
Right.
That leaves me everything you own. I mean, that takes care of things.
Right.
So that we aren't worried about you anymore.
As I'm just reading this fine print, and so you're going to die up there.
Oh, the print is fine. You're right.
Yeah, yeah. It's very fine.
Yes, yes. Just go ahead.
Sure. All the way around. Yeah. But yeah, so Marin.
How many people do you think have fallen down the Exorcist stairs? Like, I'm sure someone has done it to be funny.
I will guarantee you at least one person has done it on purpose.
Right. That's, yeah.
And
yeah.
was very sorry. By the end of it.
But so many people go to it, and it's notoriously, you've been there, it's notoriously narrow and not really meant to hold traffic and stuff. I mean, like, someone's probably fallen down it by accident.
Yeah. I was like, it is so treacherous. I was uncomfortable just walking up it.
Right.
Like, I was out of breath. I was like.
Using the handrails and things,
oh,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I wouldn't encourage anybody to film a YouTube thing. You know, screw those people falling down.
No, do not do that.
But if you have one of someone falling down by accident, that I'd like to see.
Sure. Send that to us. Put it in our listener group.
Right.
We'd love to see it. Yeah. It's like, oh, so that's what that looks like without rubber padding and the experience of a stunt man.
Right, exactly.
Ooh, it looks like it hurts. Mm. But yeah, that's Washington. I mean, it's like those steps got to be icy like sometime of the year, right?
Oh, sure, yeah.
Oof, yeah. But yeah, okay. So Marin is saying, you are guilty before Almighty God, guilty before his son. Guilty before the whole human race. And I love the way he's saying it. It doesn't sound like part of the prayer. It sounds like he is talking to Howdy.
Mm-hmm.
He makes the sign of the cross over Reagan, who I'm not sure what's going on here. Her arms are straight out in front of her, and she's like spasming and twitching. She curls up as Marin says, it is the Lord who expels you. He who is coming to judge both the living and the dead and the world by fire. And while all this is happening, Dimmy is still trying to get up. He has managed to get on his knees and he is reaching out and doubling back over. He's obviously trying to get back up whilst in a lot of pain, but it almost looks like he is bowing in worship and then reaching out in supplication. And as Marin finishes speaking, Marin crosses himself and slowly bows his own head. I'm not sure whether in prayer or he's bending to pick something up off the floor. Either way, it gets Dimmy moving. He is finally on his feet, and he is limping across the room toward the window.
Toward the window? Damien, no.
Toward the window? Damien. Dimmy.
What did your mother tell you about playing with open windows? Not that you would have listened.
You're such a stupid boy. Stay away from the window. But that, folks, is where our minute ends, with one priest sinking down and one priest rising up and walking again. We have reached a moment of stillness, which is going to open up to some reflection as our two priests take a well-deserved breather. And we're going to follow suit, because for now, that is all of my notes. Keenan, is there anything else?
No, I think we got it.
All right, folks, this has been another excellent Exorcist Minute. I've been Lester Ryan Clark. You can reach me on all the socials as Lester Ryan Clark.
And I've been Keenan Diaz. You can find me on Instagram and Letterboxd at Howdy Keenan.
Yeah, we got our listener group, Compelling Conversations. Go check that out and request to join, and we'll let you in here with us. Thank you so much to everyone who has shared the show by word of mouth or on social media, and a big thank you to everyone who has given us a 5-star ratings on iTunes or Spotify or wherever you listen to our show. We really appreciate it. It's going to help our little podcast grow and find more cool people like you. Okay, Keenan, are you thinking what I'm thinking?
I think I am, Lester.
Folks, until next time,
the power of the Super Mario Brothers Super Show compels you.
So, Keenan,
Mm.
did you know that the Mario song has lyrics?
No, I don't remember.
Do the Mario. Swing your arms from side to side. Come on, it's time to go. Do the Mario.
No.
Take one step and then again. Let's do the Mario all together now.
And what does Nintendo think about this? They allowed this.
They fully approve, and this is Mario canon. Chris Pratt should have taken some notes.
But like Shigeru Miyamoto like sees the Super Mario Brothers Super Show for the first time, and they're like, Miyamoto-san, what did you think about that? And turns around very slowly. There's a single tear rolling down. This is exactly what I imagined.
Yes.
And couldn't do it with this stupid pixelated 8-bit piece of shit, and you've brought it to real life. thank you wrestling legend Captain Lou Albano.
Yes, Keenan, exactly like that. Do the exorcist. Turn your head all the way around.